Before we begin, just like to couple of points. Number one, in terms of last time when we spoke about questions, there was some lack of clarity, which I just like to clarify based on what a few people mentioned to me, and that is made the statement that a question on HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not a logical question, it's an emotional question. I think that has to be phrased a little bit clearer. The question may be logical, but it isn't logical to ask questions on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, since it's beyond, or we can't assume that it's within our capability to understand what's really going on. So it isn't that the question, not we don't mean to disenfranchise the person, hey, that's a stupid question. It's not a stupid question. It's a very good question, except it isn't logical to ask such questions, even though they may be logical questions, because we're asking on a subject to a being that's essence is beyond our comprehension, and therefore it isn't logical to ask questions. Just a clarification, I think that's an important point. Secondly, I'd like to, before we begin, to mention something which I think is good advice for us personally, and I think it's very good advice for to give Talmidim, even from the earliest stages of life, once they start davening. And many years ago, Rabbi Ari Levine told me that the Alter from Slabodka told him, he used to daven for the Yomid in Chevron yet, on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and he says, the Alter told him that every day, at the end of Shmon Esrei, before he says, Aseh Leman Shemecho, he should say the following posuk. It's Tilim Peivov, I think it's posuk Yud Beis, but you'll find it there. Hoireini Hashem Darkecho, Ahalech Ba'amitecho, Yachei Levovi Li'eroh Shemecho. Teach me Hashem your ways. I should be able to go in your truths. Unite Yachei Levovi, I guess that means the union of the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara, the B'chol Levavchem, Li'eroh Shemecho, to come to Yiroh Shemayim. And he says this, the Alter told him, is a school of growth in Avedis Hashem in Yiroh Shemayim. It also seems that Hayreni Darkecho Ahalich Bamitecho seem to be the prerequisites to true Yiroh Shemayim, which is something also that's a very potent message today, that the Yiroh Shemayim doesn't start just no place. It's following the Derech Hashem. It's going in the truth of Torah, and that eventually brings a person that with his entire being he comes to the true level of Yiroh Shemayim. So I think that's important, not only for our own ruchnius, but for Talmidim, because number one, they focus on tefillah, which is important. Number two, they focus on growth in ruchnius, which is important. Number three, they realize that they need a siyata dishmaya for Hashem to help them to grow in ruchnius. And it's a very, I think, appropriate thing to share with them. Okay, one topic that we did not, according to the outline that we had, get to last time, so I'd like to do it briefly with three other topics that we had slated for tonight. And that the topic was entitled, Is Yiddishkeit Being Taught in a Vacuum? Are we providing our Talmidim a context with which to appreciate everything that they do? And the thing that stands out most in my mind is an incident that happened many years ago when we did, this was in the States, one of these Arachim type seminars, and although it was for the non-frum, there was a young frum couple that had suffered a tragedy, loss of a child, mamish in that tkufa, and they were advised for chizuk they should come to this seminar, and they took to it very, very well. It really was very powerful for them. At the end of the symposium, where everybody gets up and speaks about how the seminar affected them, so this young man gets up and says, I learned in the finest yeshivas, and he listed a whole, I mean, not too many, not too long a list. He wasn't a boki, but kol chadri Torah, but he learned in the finest yeshivas. He says, and I learned, and he listed, you know, all the subject matters that you learn in yeshiva. But he said, I never had a context with which to appreciate what it's all about. Where's it coming from? Where's it going to? What's the purpose of it all? Clue me in as to what are we really doing here in the first place? And he says, this seminar gave him that context, and I followed up after, and I found out that it literally changed his life. So context is a very important concept. And unfortunately, many of our Talmidim, especially as they get older, this is not the third grader and the fourth grader, but today a fifth grader is very intellectual sometimes, and gets sixth and seventh. Like, what's it all about? We're doing all of this. Why are we doing it? And where's it coming from? And what's the point? And not only the point of every specific action which I do, which is also a critical question, and the only reason that I'm staying away from it now is in deference to those who may have been here last year, where we discussed that in depth, the idea of Tamei HaMitzvos, the idea that the Sefer HaChinuch was afraid that his kid might go off the derech if he doesn't give him Tam V'Toeles in each mitzvah, even though he gave it to him in all of them, except one he wasn't sure of, and he was afraid that that would cause that. The Ralbag that we mentioned then, where the Ralbag says, if you wish to convince a loved one to do something that's bitzar u'muzar, it's painful and it's strange, don't tell him what it is. First tell him the benefits that he will reap from doing it, and then he says, the cheshek for the benefits will mitigate, will soften the strangeness of the pain. And if you think this is a wild concept, where do we learn it from, he says? From Avraham Avinu with the Bris Milah. Hashem did not tell Avraham Avinu that there's a knife involved in this bris. He said, if you enter into this covenant with me, you will have children, Doiris, and you'll be Yerush Eretz Yisrael. And only after he gave him what to have Cheshek for, did he give him the instruction, take a knife and do this. Do this Mila, which means that even Avraham Avinu could be affected by the sense of understanding what is the benefit, what I'm going to get out of this. That's human. Even on the highest level, it could affect a person. But we're not talking about that. We're talking maybe about a broader purpose. What's it all about? The Klal Yisrael, the world, creation. What are we doing here? In a certain sense, forgive me, the theory of accidental human existence, an accidental world existence, I don't want to do it any more respect than to call it that, but that theory, in a sense, is, okay, we're here by accident, so now I know, I'm an accident. I'm an accident, I don't have to look any further. There is no purpose. It's very disheartening. And it's very depressing. And if human happiness has to do with validation, feeling good about myself, that's the sheirish of the word oisher, is sure, validation. Validate happiness is feeling good about myself. If that's what it's all about, then this doesn't portend very well for human happiness. But it's much simpler. We're here by accident, fine. Gentlemen, we're here tonight just by accident, as we are in this entire world. No more need for thought. There's nothing to think about. That's it. But when you tell me there was a creation, then all of a sudden, why? What? What did Hashem create this world for? Did he really need this world? Is this world to his benefit? Does he get anything out of it? Does he have an ulterior motive? And these are questions which, even if they're not articulated by everybody, they're gnawing away, if not in our conscious mind, in our subconscious mind, because what in the world are we doing here? And when things go good, sometimes we don't think about it. When things get rough, we think about it even more. We worry about it even more. We resent it even more. What's the point of the whole thing? So it's very important to have some sense of context. And the question is, are our Talmidim, Talmidois, the products, the students of our educational system getting this sense of context in order to give them that broader appreciation for what they're doing? Each one can offer his own answer to that. But it certainly seems from a lot that we hear, especially from teenagers who start to think, that more could be given in terms of context. In fact, some put it this way, that they get tons of information, but they really don't know how to put it all into place. They don't know how to organize it. They don't know how to arrange it. They can't put it in sequence. They can't put it in cause and effect. They can't put it in a way that is easy for them or possible for them to relate to. And therefore, I think this sense of context is extremely important. The first thing that we have to know is there's a purpose for creation. Creation, by definition, means a purposeful act. If the world was created, as it was, then it was created for a purpose. The Creator had a purpose. Very important to try to find out, to know that purpose. And by the way, all of this information is available to us in Chazal. We don't have to ponder the works of the philosophers to discover this, but we have to take the information that's available, and at the right time, in the right place, in the right measure, in the right language, present it to our Talmidim so they too can get this sense of what is this really all about. Now, one of the first principles in purpose of creation is it certainly wasn't for the benefit of the Creator himself. Now, this can be proven by the world the way it exists today, and as it has existed for so long. If this is what he benefits from, then, wow, something doesn't make any sense. But more than that, the concept that he needs benefit is just like beyond comprehension. If he needs something, then who is he, and why am I worshiping him, and what's his significance in my life, and to add to that, this is what he needs. So it's obviously that he created it for a purpose, and Chazal tell us a posuk based on a posuk in Tehillim, Oilom Chesed Yibone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu existed eternally, from time immemorial, forever. And he needed nothing, he lacked nothing, except the essence of a Baal Chesed, of a being of Chesed, of Hatova, of kindness, of Rachamim, is to give. Chesed is not a theoretical concept. Chesed is an active concept. The essence is to give. And I guess, in a sense, it's irreverent to say he had a problem. Who's he going to be native to? So his essence was, and again, this has to be simplified for younger people, and I'm simplifying it too because I don't understand it, but this is the simple way of dealing with it. You know, it gets much more esoteric, and I'm sure in the works of Kabbalah it's far more sophisticated, but basically HaKadosh Baruch Hu's HaTovah, his essence of Chesed was such that in order to be able to bestow Chesed, he created a world. He created everything on this world and all the human beings who would be the recipients of his Chesed. And he even created need, so that because Chesed is the fulfillment, the filling of a need, is that to being mative is to take a chit, to be memale, the chisoron of someone. And he created all of this, a system like that, all to be able to be mative. Now, little children won't understand this. And big children, like us, may not understand it either fully. But the concept itself is understandable. In a general sense, an superficial sense. It's understand. That's it. Hashem created the world for Chesed. Oh, that's all he wants to do is the Chesed. Now, this does a number of good things and creates a couple of more issues. The good that it does is it tells us that everything, the whole purpose for creation was Chesed. So that's really what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's all. Olam Chesed Yibone. There is nothing else. Now that helps a lot of times when we stub our toe, and that should be the worst thing that ever happens to us, or when other frustrations or difficulties set in. And of course then, you know, we know. I know Olam Chesed Yibone. I know it's all about Chesed, so now I have to try to see and find it. How is this in sync, in consonance with his Chesed? But at least I know where I'm looking. It's all about Chesed. That fits with what Chazal say, Kol ma de'ovid rachmono le'tav ovid. So it gives us a certain direction or a perspective. But then again, what is the Chesed? What is the level of Chesed? what's the essence of this chesed? How do you understand this chesed? What happens with this chesed? So we have to understand, as the Shir Hashirim explains in the very first parak, that Hashem really, Ha'odom lo nivra, I've heard it taken out of the context, lo nivra ela lehisanik. That's a hedonistic approach. Ha'odom lo nivra ela lehisanik. Man was created only for pleasure. Of course, if you stop in the middle, it's always dangerous. You know, you could say, Shem and Hashem is kolei habav is kol harashoyim. They're all confused. Don't come late either, because there's kol harashoyim is kol habav yashmi. Now get the whole context. Shem and Hashem is kolei habav, there's kol harashoyim yashmi. Odom ha-niva el lesanig al Hashem, shezeh ha-tainog ha-amiti va-idun ha-golu mikol ha-idunim she-choyim ha-mimotzei. That's very important. That Hashem didn't want cheap chesed. Now, he had nothing against cheap chesed. In fact, he's for all chesed. But he really wants the ultimate chesed. That's the ultimate goal. Ultimate goal of Olam Chesed Yibona is the highest possible chesed, is the greatest possible hatovah, is the greatest possible pleasure that he can give us. And that pleasure is l'hisanig al Hashem. And that's very important. Again, the younger children, it's going to be a harder concept to rejoice in our connection to Hashem. Older people sometimes also have problems with that. People that have challenges sometimes find it easier to deal with that as a way to cope with their challenges. But the truth is the truth. This is what it is. And Sil Sushan continues and says that the Mokoy Mo'idim Hazeh, who be'emes ha'olam habo, shu ha'nivra ba'achona ha'mitzareches l'gobozeh. And I think this is a very important point too. The ultimate chesed, the ultimate tainuk, the ultimate lehisanig al Hashem, that's olam habo. Because, Mr. Shem says, because it's created with the hachona, with the preparation that allows it to happen. You see, in the olam ha'emes, in the olam habo, there's no distractions. My body doesn't crave for hunger or for taiva or for this or for that or the other thing. The body is a big distraction. The human body is a tremendous distraction. In fact, that's the secret of the formula of earning the chesed, because I'm put in as a big nesoyin. The neshama alone would soar. The neshama alone is pure. But the taivas are what pull us. Olam Haba doesn't have the body, it's only the neshama. And therefore it's appropriate. You can have the ultimate lehisanig al Hashem without any mafriim. However, it's important, I believe, critical, I believe, in chinuch, to be medayik and to say, be'emes ha'olam haba. What does that mean? That means, I would say, be'emes means the ultimate, in real truth. In other words, there is lehisanig al Hashem in this world. And that's critical. Because if there's not lisanig al Hashem in this world, then your kids will tell you, I don't have the patience to wait. I always quote my poor grandmother who got an explosion of a pressure cooker. When I was a kid, I remember this. She was laid up for months, and the terrible pain, she burns all over. And I remember, I used to hear from her, Oy in jene Welt it sei na sehr glücklich. In the next world, it's going to be so happy. And I, as a kid, said, I ain't interested in waiting for the next world. You know what I mean? And I didn't grow up in this generation today, where the next world has to be the next second, or the last second, otherwise everybody is frustrated. But, you know, nobody has patience for the next. So, mitzarecho, the ultimate is there. And without that ultimate, we can't go through this world. This world is too painful unless we know there's an olam haba. The suffering, the difficulties, the challenges, come to Israel, forget my English. The shortness of human life is the word. But anyway, you know, this, if without olam haba, what? Somebody passes from this world, it's all over. What if they pass away young? Then there's no hope. There's nothing. There's nothing to talk about. What are we talking about? So. Obviously, we need the concept of Olam Haba. Excuse me just one second, I'm supposed to. Hopefully we're having something else delivered for you tonight, so just have to make sure it's taken care of. Thank you. Anyway, it's certainly we need the Olam Haba. But the young people today are not ready to settle for Olam Haba. They don't have the patience. The older people, nobody has the patience to wait for Olam Haba. And the Mela, we have to know that in this world there's also the Sanegal Hashem, not to that level. But we can experience in this world, and we must realize that the tachlis in this world is to be zeiche to enough kurva to Hashem. David HaMelech said, "Vani kurva selikim li toif," and that kurva to Hashem is part of the schus that allows me; it earns me, and it also makes me capable of being lesanig el Hashem in the olam hanitzchi. And a very, very important concept to understand that purpose of creation. Now, how do we earn this Tainug al Hashem? What are the prerequisites to be able to be Misanig al Hashem? What do we have to know? What do we have to achieve? What do we have to accomplish? How do we go about it? Okay. So now, there's an interesting thing. In the Sforim it says, it's basically based on the Posuk. The Posuk in Tilim says, Dovor Tzivo Le'elef Doyer. And what they say is as follows. The original plan was different from what actually happened. Maimon HaSinai took place way before 1,000 generations from creation. Really the plan was that the Torah would be given at the end of Elef Dor, of 1,000 generations. That's, let's say, 3,000 years or approximately, whatever. And what's going to happen is, in the interim, man would ready himself for this opportunity for the highest levels of human perfection by learning from creation the midos that he needs to be makabel Torah. He'd learn nikios from a cat, then snios from, I forgot, Chazal delineate a whole list of from the animals and from different worldly elements that man could learn midos and memela elevate himself, that when he comes to Kabbalah HaTorah, he comes with the purest, most ready, most perfect, most compatible personality, neshoma, human existence, to be able to be makabel the Torah and to be able to maintain that shibud to the Torah. Unfortunately, what happened and how this works, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew this up front, but it has to play out itself. That's a philosophical thing that's beyond my comprehension and beyond the scope of this discussion. I don't think it's necessary for teaching our Talmidim. And what happened is the program was moved up. Rather than Elef Dor, it had to happen a lot earlier because the world wouldn't have existed. So now we have a Kabbalah Satira, which is supposed to accomplish, would have accomplished much more had we been more perfect in preparation for it. But this was the need of the hour. And then, of course, there was a Matan Torah. Now, the original plan in Gan Eden, which was also to be Nen Miziv Hashchina, talking directly in Gan Eden, right there, that one didn't work. Again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the most pristine form of L'Hisaneg Al Hashem. However, the human being has to have a Yetzer Hara. Because if he doesn't have a Yetzer Hara, he's not going to earn the chesed, and if he doesn't earn the chesed, Chazal tell us there will be nama de kisufa, he'll be embarrassed, he won't appreciate it, and really what it means is, you're minimizing Hashem's chesed. If he gives chesed chinom, that you don't deserve, you won't appreciate it as much, you'll feel uncomfortable about it, you feel undeserving, you feel embarrassed, so he didn't maximize his opportunity for chesed. Of course, that, and in Gan Eden, was one mitzvah. It didn't work. For whatever reason, it didn't. And Mimela, then the world started going down, 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 instead of going up, 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 the way the original plan was. And then, you know, at one point there was a change, a tenderus, Noach came along, but that didn't change the world, until Avraham Avinu came along and started a process which is still in motion, and has expanded and continued to this very day. And that is in the form of Matan Torah. Klal Yisrael was taken out of Mitzrayim with Nisim Gluyim, brought to Har Sinai. They suffered immensely in Mitzrayim, and the Tesis Rid says that the reason they had to suffer in Mitzrayim was because they never could have been Zeiche in the Matzav that they were as descendants of Terach, Tosfos Reads says it's in his Haggadah, Mitchila Oyd Le'Avodah Zorah Hoya Avoseinu. As descendants of Terach, they couldn't have been zeichah to a Kabbalah Satorah and to Kabbalah Mitzvahs, so they had to suffer. V'chas aleihem, and with Rachamim, he was able to grant them that which they couldn't have earned. But that's also a form, I call it an entitlement. You know, people that suffer, they have a certain attitude that it's kumt mir, you know, it's coming to me. And it's not coming to you because you earned it, but it's coming to you because you deserve it. You deserve it to make up for all your suffering, even though you never earned it. So it's at least a partial adjustment of the chesed to be something that I can appreciate, because it's something, I call that an entitlement. That's what entitlements, I think. I don't know what you call them over here, but we have entitlement programs. The people that are on the entitlement programs, they did not earn these entitlements, but they deserve it by dint of the poverty level, by dint of age and illness and whatever it may be. Those are called entitlements. So Kodesh Baruch Hu had this entitlement program, and even though we couldn't fully deserve Ma'abed Har Sinai through the suffering that we went through, and Agav, I think I mentioned this, Taka, the other time. Agav, maybe I did, but Agav, that is so therapeutic when people hear that sometimes the challenges of life are just because Hashem wants to grant us beyond what we have the capability of earning. It can be a very consoling type of a thing. Anyway, so we came to Ma'amar Har Sinai, and now we have this whole Torah. And again, we ask the question, what's the tachlis? Hashem wants to do chesed. Do chesed! What do you want from my life? Do chesed! If I do chesed and you don't earn, then you know what happens? Nama de kisufa. It's going to be very embarrassing. It's going to be very uncomfortable. It's going to be very compromising. It's going to be minimally, if at all, appreciated, because I didn't earn it. I don't feel bailus on it. I don't feel ownership. It's not mine. It's not real. It's something is phony over here. And Mamela is a system of Torah and mitzvahs in order for us to earn the chesed that Hashem wishes to grant us, to bring ourselves closer to be able to be the enemies of Hashchino, and to have earned it, to be able to appreciate it, and not to be embarrassed because of it. Now, what is that system? How do we earn it? What do we do? Chazal say, Lo nitna ha-mitzvahs ela l'tzareif b'nes abriyos. The mitzvahs are all to purify mankind. That's all. It's all about purifying us. Nothing more. So a person has to purify his midas. The mitzvahs ha-Torah, kulam ke-echod, some in a very obvious way, others in a not so obvious way, but all work to bring us closer to Hashem, to bring us closer to emulating Hashem, to bring us closer to modeling our midas after the midas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the mele becoming that Ben Odom Soruf, refined person, refined of all the impurities in Midos. And Memele, now I can be Zeiche. The Kabbalah Satorah, maybe I got as an entitlement. But now I can be Zeiche personally. I mean, the Klal Yisrael got as an entitlement. But now I can be Zeiche personally to be closer and closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. And through that to be Zeiche to the ultimate Nen and Iziv Hashchina, to the ultimate Lisanig Al Hashem Boilum Habo, because of all of the purification that I have done to purify myself more and more and more. Now this is a very powerful thought on a different level, because if happiness, as we mentioned, is about validation, osher, feeling good about yourself, the more I purify myself, the more godly I feel. Imagine if somebody walked over to you and said, called you God. I mean, we wouldn't exactly be able to tolerate that. But you know, wow. You confused me and him. You know, you got it confused. You thought, you know, no, you got the wrong party over here. But there's something so validating about it. I'm godly. I heard many years ago from my Rebbe, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva. I heard also the same thing I heard from Chaim Shmulevitz. I don't know if it's in one of the Sforim, but he said, Chideshim Tiyu. So they bring a sifri says, "Kedoshim tiu yochol komoini tamalim ani Hashem alekeichem." When the Torah said "Kedoshim tiu," should be sanctified, holy, mufresh, moved from all the priests in this world. You might think that you're supposed to be just like Hashem. Talmud Loimar, not quite. Ani Yeshem Elokeichem. Ad kan, but not, you know, not there. So a human being can reach a level of godliness to the extent that he could have a havamina in reading the pasuk kedoshim tiyu. Ooh, just like Hashem, me and him, we're like this. That's what the human being is. That's the guy. We'll get back to that on another topic in a little while, hopefully. But anyway, so this sense of purifying ourselves and making ourselves godly is a very uplifting type of a thing. Makes people feel good about themselves, which is always a helpful way to engage them in further commitment to a life of Torah mitzvahs, because it's going to make them feel good. Now, ultimately, this goal in this world is to be achieved in Eretz Yisrael. And of course, we went into Eretz Yisrael, and there are mitzvahs atlius v'oretz, there's the hashoras hashchino in the Beis HaMikdosh, there's the kedusha se'oretz, there's the avira Eretz Yisrael that's machtim. There's so much that can elevate us so much higher. Unfortunately, everything we do is conditional to our appropriate behavior, both the behavior of the individual and his individual earnings, and the behavior of the Klal Yisrael as a unit. And we know that the Davonenu, it didn't exactly go that well. There was a Churban Bayis Rishon, which took place because of one cause. There was a Churban Bayis Sheni, which was because of additional problems. And then the Golos. And the Golos that we're in today is a Golos that is supposed to rectify the shortcomings that brought it about in the first place, and in the process be able to reach the point where we can come back to Eretz Yisrael for the final return to Eretz Yisrael, for the final building of the third and last thing, Beis HaMikdosh, and to be zeichet to see eventually in different stages. How it happens is not too clear. The Rambam says we don't know exactly the order of things, but to be zeichet eventually to be mekuyim that nevuah of molo oretz deyas Hashem kimayim liyamachasim. And that's basically what we await. And in the process, our mission has changed a little bit. The mission of creation was for mankind. You know, let it be known that Adam HaRishon was not Jewish. Okay? It was not. And the plan was for all of mankind to be zeicha to this chesed, to be zeicha to this nene v'sif hashchida, which is also important, because in some of the philosophy today, to hear, you know, it's shocking to many people to find out that Judaism is the only major organized religion where you don't have to be Jewish to go to heaven. You know that? All the other, if you're an infidel, or you're what are the other words? I forgot. You know, you can't go. But Judaism, the goy can have a chelik in Gan Eden too. Ultimately, it was to bring this message to the world. Initially, Avraham Avinu was engaged in that. After Matan Torah, the situation became such, and eventually, as time went on, we were more focused, or we were instructed to be more focused. Koshim Gedim Yisrael, Kisapachas, the Gemara says, we were instructed to be more focused on, let's take care of Klal Yisrael first. And eventually, we will be the light unto the nations. We will eventually bring the Molo Oretz Deyas Hashem Kimayim Le'amachasim through Klal Yisrael to the entire world's recognition, and that, of course, is the ultimate goal. So I think that in terms of some perspective, some of these ideas are very important, that one way or another, age-wise, you know, level-wise, but to be able to convey them, because otherwise it leaves an enormous void in the minds, in the hearts of our children, of our Talmidim, because they don't have a sense of where we're coming from and where we're going to. And here, in a very quick overview, in a very brief and general sense, we sort of charted the course from creation to the final stages of the Geula, which is the final fulfillment of history. Yes?
Rebbe started with double tzibun and erev dawn.
Okay.
How did that come into the whole
Well, no, all I meant was that originally the plan was that the Torah that we will eventually receive will be much more ready for it, because we'll have achieved a much higher level of personal perfection in learning from the Bria. Since that plan was not working, and if anything, what we found was that the world was going down, so it seems that HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his infinite wisdom, of course, knew this all before, that's a different discussion, but moved up the program. That's all. So just there was a piece of understanding. That's not a critical piece of the context. Most people don't know about that, and it's not really critical, but it's interesting to understand that, because the ultimate goal never changed, and that is to find the sources and maximize the sources of human perfection. And that's really what it's about. And human perfection, by the way, is a very palatable concept to secular Jews as well. In fact, the secular Jews, as we sort of intimated the other day, would like to see a little bit more human perfection from us. You know, we mentioned that years ago, the biggest excuse not to be religious was the tzadik v'raloi, the suffering of the righteous. Today, many people say it's the behavior of the righteous. So we righteous people really should behave at the best we can, because the world out there is looking very seriously at us, and that's why our inappropriate behavior is to get a chilul Hashem, because people look at us and say, hey, this is what it's supposed to be, and this is not the way it's supposed to be. Okay, next topic. Let's see what we can do with this briefly also. Providing our Talmidim with the tools and the confidence to learn on their own. This is a very critical piece of chinuch. We mentioned yesterday or the other day that the chinuch is the tchilas knisas odom, which means it's the beginning of the entry, and therefore to something that's going to remain. And therefore, if it's only the beginning of the entry has to be able to continue to do on his own. He has to constantly enter from one level to the next, to the next, to the next, and that can only happen if he has the proper tools. It's quite obvious that also confidence in learning. How much confidence do I get in myself when I constantly listen to a lecture and I don't do anything on my own? All I have to do is memorize. Well, you know something? You know a secret? This has a better memory than anybody sitting in this room. This could do better than a photographic memory. Okay? So, how good could I feel about myself? All I do is sit and listen, and as one kid told me, a very bright boy, he said, all we do is we listen and we try to memorize what the Rebbe said to be able to, in his language, spit it back when we have the test at the end of the week. Well, it's not about spitting back. And spitting back never made anybody feel good about himself. And that's not really the way to give a person confidence that he has anything. What do I have? I have memories, and you know, memories get lost. Okay, I have recordings, I have notes. Do you ever try reading your notes 10 years later and you don't know what in the world? That's your own notes. What if you took notes from somebody else? And by the way, if you take notes and try to listen at the same time, that's also a challenge. You know, no problem. But anyway, it's also a challenge. So it's not the way. We have to give them the tools that they will be able to learn on their own. And that is most critical. That's the only way they'll feel good about themselves, and that's the only way they'll be able to continue learning. Imagine, the guy listened to shiurim for years. Now he doesn't have a Rebbe in his pocket. He can't afford to have a Rebbe walking around teaching him 24/7, or even an hour a week. So now what? Oh, on my own. What am I supposed to do? I don't know how to read, by the way, a Makas Medina today. Don't know how to read. I don't know how to think, because I didn't really have to think much, because when someone else does all the thinking for you, it really doesn't maximize your own thinking engine. I really don't have tools. No one ever gave me they said, hey, here's what you have to do and you're going to do it on your own. Or here's an opportunity to do it on your own. No, I do it on my own. Learning is listening. You know. So he's lost. And this is why so many people, when they leave yeshiva and when they leave learning, they drift. Because I'll go to a shir. You know what it is? So let's say if a person works a whole day, he works hard, whatever he does, and he comes to a shir late at night, chances are there's a chorus of snorers there. Because how much can you listen to? You know, it's hard. So we have to be able to give them as much as humanly possible the tools for learning on their own. Okay, so now I'd like to spend just a few moments on developing some of those tools. And actually, I hope, hasn't come yet? Okay, it's supposed to arrive. We printed stuff over here and I forgot about this. This was written many years ago and I didn't appreciate until I looked at it yesterday to see that this stuff that might very well be relevant. So hopefully we'll have a copy for everyone before we leave tonight. But let's see about developing some of the basic skills. Now, the first skill, of course, is reading. All right? If you can't read, even if everything is translated into English or modern Hebrew, whatever you have, whatever you speak, it's not the same thing. A human mind is very critical. I want to study primary sources. A translation is not a primary source psychologically, even though it is, and hopefully the translation is accurate, but it certainly doesn't have that power of primary source. It doesn't have that same level of connection with Maamar Har Sinai. And it certainly doesn't give me the ability to use some of the other skills that are critical in learning, like diktuk in the Loshon, like really understanding and deriving from the text what the text is saying. In fact, what it does encourage is interpretation as exposed to explanation. You know what the difference is? Interpretation means I take my ideas and put it into the text. If I don't have an accurate text, if I don't know how to read the original primary text, then I'm just taking these concepts and putting my ideas in. I have no way of knowing if the language of the text will tolerate, will justify, will bear out, or will contradict that idea which I'm saying. So really, I'm interpreting. Because in the English and the translation, you can't get those nuances. So explanation is you're drawing from the text rather than putting your own ideas into the text. You're explaining. That's X means exit out, and interpretation is putting in. Now, I can't do that not in the original language, because the original language was written with such Ruach HaKodesh, with such Siyata Dishmaya, with such nuance, with such accuracy, with such an emphasis on the exacting truth, that I can judge whether I'm putting some wrong idea in or I have enough information to extract something. But from the English translation, there's not enough information not to... Like, where do we extract an idea from? I see, there's a strange language here. There's a nuance that didn't make sense. There's an extra word. You don't see extra words in English. You may see extra words in English, but you don't see extra words from the Sefer that are in the translation in English. So you don't have the tools to really extract the essence. And we must remember and we must teach our Talmidim always, the Torah is infinitely deep. This is the Dvar Hashem. This is the ultimate in depth. You know, there's Misholim for we say the Torah can be Rechova Mineyam, Raruka Be'eretz Mido. It's wider than the sea and longer than the circumference of the world. There's no Moshel to its depth, because there is no limit to its depth. In the material world, there's no moshel to the depth, because there is no such thing. Material world is finite. The Torah is infinite. Memela, we want to delve to the ultimate depth that we can achieve without text. So the first thing is reading exercises. It's always wise to have kids building vocabulary. They make a list of the new words and they constantly, you know, work on them. But they also need phraseology. They also need idiom. They also have to become familiar. There are today a lot of books. There's even one thing I noticed. I don't remember what it's called, but it's like a plastic card. I guess it's, and maybe it's in English, but they, I'm sure they have here too, a plastic card, like three, like six folds or something, with the basic Gemara words, phrases, concepts, you know, so something to begin, because without the reading process, at best, we're going to have a handicapped student. It's a lifelong handicap, unless one, at some point, really learns how to read. So that's definitely number one. But let's go on to a few other things, just to get a sense. When we're learning, and we're talking about learning Gemara, we're talking about learning Chumash and Novi, you know, the main primary texts. It's very important to be able to understand what's happening. For example, sometimes we're learning Pshat. This is exactly what it means. Some Mefarshim are offering a Drash. This is not what it means, but this is something that can be seen in the words of the text, taken out of context. That could be very confusing. For example, Rashi writes in the Hakdoma to Shir HaShirim that he says there are many Midrashim on Shir HaShirim, but he chose those Midrashim that are Misyashiv Lefi, what he calls, I forgot the word he uses, but the storyline. It's a story of a husband and wife that were in love and that were estranged and the whole business, and he took only Midrashim that follow the storyline, not and one particular medrash out of context. That's very important to know, are we doing context, and can I use this piece that it says on this pasuk in context of the next pasuk, or do I have to know this is a separate drush, it's like in a vacuum, it's like encased by itself, and it makes a critical difference whether I understand the text or not. For example, there's a beautiful drash in Shir HaShirim which Rashi doesn't bring. It's very important psychologically, but Rashi doesn't bring it. On the pasuk Shchirani v'Nova v'Reis Yerushalayim, so one of the drushas Chazal make is Shchirani be'enai, I'm black in my own eyes, I'm ugly. The afal pi sheshchira shenova ani be'enai Hakadosh Baruch Hu, adayin Shchirani be'enai. Okay, even though in the eyes of Hakadosh Baruch Hu I'm beautiful, but in my eyes I'm not beautiful. It's a very interesting piece of psychology. Basically, I could know that in the eyes of the judge of the beauty contest, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, that I'm considered beautiful, but if I didn't discover it myself, just the knowledge, the outside knowledge that he considers me beautiful, is not enough. And this is a very important point. It has nothing to do with the discussion here, but letting children discover their own powers, their own capabilities, their own uniqueness, their own gifts. Because just telling, oh, you're so smart, oh, you're so talented, oh, you're so good, sounds very nice, but it usually goes in one ear and out the other. But when I discover it, or sometimes when late at night they're sleeping and they couldn't fall asleep and they hear the parents talking about how wonderful, how great, how smart, how this, ooh, that's already a bit of a discovery. That's not, but they have to discover most discoveries, best discoveries. When I do it myself, I do things, I see, it happens. So, however, this is a drash. This doesn't fit the storyline. If you try to fit this into the storyline in Shir HaShirim, you're going to be very confused. It doesn't fit in with the psukim. So we have to be able to distinguish, and this is where so many kids get confused. What is the text doing? Is it telling me simple pshat? Does it follow a sequence? Or is it some outside thing that's just there for the purposes of darshaning something? It's Torah. It's das Torah. It's meaningful. It's true. But it will confuse me if I don't know that it's not supposed to be part of the storyline. Okay, one concept. Another thing, and this I think in the girls' seminaries they do a lot of it, but it's really something that's very, very important. We learn Rashi and Chumash. Sometimes we learn Rashi in Gemara too. What's bothering Rashi? Rashi doesn't get paid by the word. Tosfos certainly doesn't get paid. No, Rashi is quite obviously didn't get paid by the word mostly. But nobody gets paid by the word. It didn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. I don't know about today in publishing, but it didn't work that way in those days. Mimela, I have to understand what's bothering him. He comes and says something poshut. Oh, I know. I get it. He thought that we're stupid. Oh, I get it. Rashi was not writing for 700 years ago. He was writing for 700 years later and insulting the intelligence of all the people, including the Vilna Goyim, until today when the stupid people don't know why he says what he says. No, that's not true. That's not the truth. What's happening is something's bothering him. And in Chumash we find it all the time. Rashi, something's bothering him. And usually, in Gemara and in Chumash, but usually something's bothering him in the text. Because Rashi was very much textually oriented. You know, the Nachmas David writes in the Hakdoma, I guess it's Bava Kamava Metzia, I think. He says that there was, on an esoteric level, not on a very basal level, but on a very sophisticated level, there was machlekes in Shita between Rashi and Tosfos. What was the machlekes? He says, when there was a text where the seichel would indicate one thing, the Shvora Yishora, and the Loshon would indicate something else, on a very sophisticated level, where the seichel is good, even according to that, and the Loshon is good, but which one is better? One is a little better. Which do you go with? Rashi sided for the Loshon, Tosfos sided for the Svora. Ad kedei kach that I believe that's the reason that when Rashi says kloima, we know we have a Kabbalah, kloima means to say, I'm fixed, the Loshon doesn't really say this. So kloima means, that is to say, in other words, he's apologizing. He says, this is not what I'm being mefarish, it's not really what the Loshon says, but I needed to veer from the Loshon over here to make sense out of it. That's what the claim means. So that was Rashi. Now, so we have to be able to deal with a text and with a lotion to know exactly what's going on, what's bothering him, why is he saying what he's saying. And in Rashi's case, and usually in all Mefarshim, sometimes in Tosfos it's a little more in the Cheshbon, the steps of the Gemara, but something in the Psukim surely, and maybe even in the Gemara, as what's bothering him. Very important. The same parallel question is, where did Rashi get it from? What's bothering him? And where did he get it from? I'll never forget the day that I asked the class many years ago, where did Rashi get this from? And somebody raised their hand and said, Ruach HaKodesh! And I said, I have no doubt that Rashi had Ruach HaKodesh. But I also have no doubt that he didn't use it in writing his Pirush on Chumash. First of all, I do have a doubt whether that would be the Lema Shemayim. I don't know about that. But he didn't use that. He got it from the text itself. And a very simple, cute example of this, but this should be taught, and I want to tell you something else. This is the greatest Chizuk in Emunah. Because when children can see that Meforshim make comments, and the comments are not from Boich, when the comments are not from the Luften, from the air, from no place, the comments are drawn directly from an imperative in the text. Wow, there's nothing like this in the world. Shakespeare didn't do that, Lahavdil Elef Abdolus. Dickens didn't do that, Lahavdil Elef Abdolus. This is Tiras Hashem. This is where the Emunah Pshuta comes from. This is why we don't even, sometimes some people don't even need anything more than that, because it's as if, not that you're going to show me the evidence that there was a Maimon Har Sinai. I'm in Har Sinai every day. This is Maimon Har Sinai. I see HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealing His secrets to me through the Psukim. So let's take a simple example. It says, Vayovo Noach Lateva, forgive me, I don't have the closing in front of me, Mipnei Mei HaMavu. Okay? Noach went in, you know, the Mabul was coming, Mipnei Mei HaMavu, he went in. Says Rashi, Noach mitane amuna hoya, ma'amin ve'eno ma'amin. Noach was somewhat lacking in his emuna, his belief. A ma'amin ve'eno ma'amin. He believed and he didn't believe. And he only went in when the rain started. He didn't go in before. He had some hesitation that maybe it's not going to be a marble after all, on some level, whatever that means. Where did Rashi get it from? Made it up. Stop to malign Noach's character. Noach is a man. You know, what do you want from him? He spent so many years building that table and being moichiach the generation. After all that toichocha, he didn't believe. So I believe the Sifsa Chachomim points out, but usually Sifsa Chachomim points out most of these things. It's amazing what the Sifsa Chachomim does to show where Rashi got it from. What's bothering Rashi? What's bothering him in the pasuk? Why did Torah have to say he went into the table mipnei mei hamavul? Torah said he went into the table mipnei hamavul or lifnei hamavul or biglal hamavul mipnei mei hamavul. Means the water. the water sent him in. The Torah didn't have to write that the water sent him in. It could have said the Mabul was coming. Mipnei HaMabul. No, Mipnei Mei HaMabul. It means the water sent him in. It started dripping. It started raining. So here Rashi saw, and there's thousands of examples like that. And this gives them, this gives our Talmidim such a sense of mastery. I can read a text, I can understand the Rashi, I know what he means, I know where he's coming from, I know how to think, I know how to analyze psukim, I understand the basis for everything. It's a whole different sense of emuna, it's a whole different sense of self-confidence, it's a whole different sense of chashivas haTorah, because I have just this one skill. And this is just one of so many other skills. Something else that's also very important. Talk about Chazal say something. Okay, so they make a statement. Make a statement about Avram Avinu. About, you know, we made a statement before. We said Avram Avinu, Hashem didn't tell Avram Avinu that he's going to have to use a knife. Rather, he told him, you're going to have Eretz Yisrael and this, and you enter this covenant with me. And then he told him about the knife. And the Ralbag says that this is going to make, it's going to help mitigate the pain and the suffering, because the cheshet for the benefits. Now, what can we do to deepen the appreciation of this comment? Any ideas? And this is a tool which, if you teach, if you use in your teaching, and if you teach, you give a whole new sense of shlita on the chokhmah of Chazal. Who is Avram Avinu? And I would call this tool analyzing the context. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Avram Avinu. Do you know what Avram Avinu did? 10 Nisyonos. This was one of them. Do you know what he eventually came to? An Akedah. Hashem said, Shech, the Rotzol Nishchot Es Benoi. Because Hashem said, Shech, I want a Shech. This is who we're talking about. He is going to be influenced by the fact that he doesn't know before that there's a benefit. And from the Ralbag is very clear, telling him after you told him that there's a knife, telling him the benefit would not be as powerful. Avram Avinu, that Avram that we know him so well, we know him so intimately, we know so much about his life, we know his godless, we know his mesiras nefesh, he's going to be influenced by the difference whether you told him before that he's going to have Eretz Yisrael, and then you told him there's a knife, or you said, enter into bris, here's a knife, and now let me tell you, before you do it, what you're going to benefit. That could make a difference, like Avram Avinu. So just putting into context who we're talking about makes it a whole different message. The message is so much more powerful. The magnitude of the message, the depth of the message is on a different level. This is another example of context, seeing things in context. There's another thing that in teaching is critical, and just a technique in teaching Talmidim how to learn, which I think is a very critical and unfortunately not always so emphasized. There's a question, there's an answer. Most of what we do is question and answer, right? Certainly in Gemara, in Tosfos, in most of what we have is question and answer. So, what do we do? Well, there's a question. Fine. Oh, okay. Now there's an answer. That's also good. Very nice. Sir, how does the answer answer the question? But there's an answer. Well, that's the answer. Well, what do you want for my life? Like, what are you making trouble? Or some would say, what are you kvetching so much? You know, how does the answer answer the question? Of course, the answer is portion. The answer is so obvious. The answer is so obvious. So first of all, then you just raised another question. Then why was the question so stupid? The Gemara asks stupid questions and gives obviously intelligent answers. But if that's the case, the whole body of knowledge is not a very intelligent endeavor. Stupid questions and obvious answers. Who needs it? And what you've created is an intellectual zombie.
where, what? What am I thinking? What am I doing? What's happening over here?
The question, whether it's the Gemara's question, whether it's Rashi's question, whether it's Tosfos's question, whether it's the Pnei Yeshua's question, whether it's any question from Gedolei Olam, the question is a question. In fact, we should tell our Talmidim a secret. The Seichel HaYosher is with the question. The question is ultimately and eminently true. It's just machmas hakushya, because there's a contradiction to this question, because there's a problem, which is what the question elucidates, we have to say a chiddush, we have to come up with an answer, which is not the answer that the Seichel HaYosher of the giant Amora, of the giant Rishon, of even the giant Achron would have thought of. The Seichel HaYosher was like the question. And now, because of the problem, we have to have an answer. Fine. So now tell me, how does that answer? Answer that brilliant question. This exercise alone can open minds to think, can transform children to men, non-thinkers to thinkers, and it can help generate a true Talmid Chacham. Because we got them to think and to analyze. And in the process, you can only get a deeper and clearer understanding of the Chiddush. Because, and this is also very, very true, they should know this, 90%, and nobody knows the exact percent, of the answer is in the question. The question got everything right. The question knew everything. Tosfos in the beginning of Metzia asked the question in the second Tosfos there, and Shnei Mechzim Betalus, and then gives an answer of the Gemara on Daf Gimel that is Kilu Shnei Mechzim Bo. So, oh, I get it. In the question, he forgot the Gemara on Daf Gimel, and now he's Mechadish in his answer the Gemara on Daf Gimel. That makes a lot of sense. Oh, I know what happened. Yeah, he really had a memory lapse. But didn't he review his text before he sent it in for publication? So how? Well, no, his memory was so bad that even that time he forgot it. Come on. What are you talking about? He didn't know that. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula. The Havamina has to be in sync with every piece of information in Kol HaTorah Kula. It's the ultimate emes, except for the problem that we have in this Mishnah. And therefore, Tosfos has to be Mechadish. And then, something else that's also very important. Chidush has to be very small, a difference between the question and the answer. They once asked the Chofetz Chaim, they didn't have, there was a tkufa there, between Rosh Hashivas, that they didn't have a Rosh Hashiva. So they were complaining to the Chofetz Chaim. So he said, I guess it was like a teretz, what do you need a Rosh Hashiva? Put two sforim together, and he says, you see, this is the Havamina, this is the Maskona. Just figure out the slight difference. Get the question, and you figure out the slight difference in the terrace, and you got it all. You know what you need. You don't need a Rosh Hashiva. Rav Ari Levine told me that he learned as a young boy in Malozhin. He says the way they used to learn is they would learn a Tosfos Kasha, cover over the terrace, work on it for an hour to try to come up with a terrace, each one arguing and disputing what the other one said, and when they finally saw that they really didn't do justice, then they opened up the terrace, but then they understood what was going on, because they lived the question. These are some, I think we have to take a very brief break. These are some of the ideas. If and when we're zeiche that this book will arrive this evening, it has a lot of examples in learning, examples in Chumash and other things. It has a list of, it says here, the 10 fundamental principles of learning B'iyun, and it could be very helpful in some of these things. I think by way of variety and just changing the sound of the music a little bit, so we had entitled a piece of this discussion this evening is The Torch of Slabotka, the key to reaching the next generation. Now, ultimately, chinuch, teaching, is really a misnomer. We should not become teachers. We should become reachers. Because if you teach and you don't reach your target, you really haven't done anything. You may have made yourself feel good about, oh, I gave a good shiur today, but who got it? You know? I said a good shiur, but who was listening or who understood it? So it's about reaching. It's reaching the target, reaching their minds with understanding, and it's also reaching the depths of their neshama with inspiration and commitment and an uplifting sense of what Torah is all about. So that's really the goal. And it's well known that when the Altar from Slabodka was embarking on creating the Slabodka Yeshiva, so he met Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he asked Rabbi Yisrael, how do you make a yeshiva? He quoted one pasuk for him. He said the pasuk in the Novi that says, we say it in Kippah HaFer, I think, L'hachis ruach shvolim, L'hachis lev nitkoyim. It's about breathing life into downtrodden spirits. It's about uplifting people. And that's really so critical. If you look at the Rabbeinu Yoina, I was supposed to have a copy here, but I don't. In the Shari Avoido, I mentioned it the other day, in Rabbeinu Yoina, the very beginning talks about the Shari, the Psicha to Avodas Hashem, is this sense of appreciating who I am and where I come from. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And each one, he says, can reach that highest level, each one according to his own kaifis. So in other words, it's not an absolute Avram Avinu, but it's a Avram Avinu's level that I can reach according to my kaifis, so everybody can be part and parcel of this process. So it's all about uplifting and making people feel great, making feel good about themselves. The Altar of Slabodka had a tremendous influence. And it's Kedai, and because he was the classical, the consummate mechanech. This generation, Rav Shach said it, he says, everything we have in the yeshiva world today comes from the altar. All the talmidim, and wherever you go, wherever you turn, you know, yeshivas today, here in America, throughout, it's talmidim or talmidim of talmidim. It's under the influence from the altar from Slabodka. So analyzing some of his pedagogical methods can be very, very uplifting and inspiring. So I'd just like to list, we don't have much time, and I have another topic also, so I just want to make it as quickly as possible. Number one, there was this fanatical commitment to truth. The words that they used to use in Slabodka was hechruch, to be machriach, to prove. You couldn't just say what you want. You couldn't offer interpretations, there had to be explanations that are not just drawn out of the text, but drawn out in a way that there is nothing else that you could draw out of it. Truth was paramount. In every text I learn, I want to know, what is the text saying? True to the language, true to the logic, true to the steps that it's following, true completely, completely and totally. And it's told, I was obviously never there, but it's not so obvious, but I was never there, and that the battles that they had, just over the shmuzin, the altar didn't say shiurim, but he set the tone for the learning through his shmuzin. Battles and battles for hours and hours, just to try to get to what did he prove his point, didn't he prove it? Is that mukhra from the chazal, can you be sure that that's the truth? Are you maybe conjecturing something? Is there a little bit of your own originality there that's not justified in the text, in the language, in the context, in all of the information that's available to us? Paramount commitment to truth and for fighting for the truth. Part of this commitment has to do with attention to nuances in language. The language of the Chachmei Yisrael were not being poetic, were not being approximate, we're not being fly-by-night. You know, I got to write something a little bit, it didn't go that way. They sat, and it wasn't just the briska, but they sat shivanikiyim sometimes on one word. Is this the right word, or is that the right word? Because they were searching for this. And therefore, analysis of their words in the fullest sense is really a key to achieving that emes. And that's something that is very, very critical. We have to know ourselves. We have to teach our Talmidim the nuances of language, the diktuk of language. And of course, since we're talking about truth, if something in the nuance doesn't make an ounce of sense, then the assumption should be, I don't know what's going on here. But not, oh, it must be. But it's ridiculous. But it must be. That's what it says. It can't be, because it doesn't say anything ridiculous. so something's missing. And you take that commitment to nuance of language and that commitment of thinking something through. You know, thinking, the art of thinking has literally gone out of style. It's like analyzing. Does it make sense? Doesn't it make sense? Pacing back and forth and back and forth and see, I hear it, I don't. Yeah, it doesn't make sense because of this, but maybe this, maybe that. That's it. And that's something that if we teach that and we give that over, our Talmidim can soar because they can feel a balabatishkeit, an ownership of their own learning, because it's part of their tools that they've learned, and it's part of a fanatical, and I like that word, commitment to truth. Torah is a teras emes, and we want every word that comes out of our mouths to be in sync, to be part of that teras emes. Okay, that's just a few points. Let's continue. It's also very important to have a sense of what might contradict what we say. If something that we say contradicts some known information that we have, or if we don't have enough information, we should do a little research about the topic before we're ready to make the speech or the presentation, then it just can't work. I the language, I this, I that, I nothing. It's contradiction. So it has to make sense. And it can't contradict the basics that we know to be true. There was a, I wouldn't say fanatical, but there was an intense sense of Emunas Chachamim. Rashi says it. The Sepurnu says it. The Ramban says it. Not to mention, Chazal say it. That's like, there's no question, there's no doubt, that's it. That's the ultimate truth. And by the way, we know that they wrote with a tremendous Siyata Dishmaya. The Tumim says that, he says it on Ramah, I forget where it is exactly, in Chesha Mishpat, and he says that Ramah says a halocha. And then the Noisekelim, this one, the Shachs, the Taz says this one says that, the other, the Goyin says this. Five different Perushim in the Ramah. And he says like this. The Ramah meant what he meant. He meant one thing. But the Gedolei Olam wrote with a Siyata Dishmaya that their words can be understood in many other logical possibilities, and each one that these Nisei Kalim are saying Pshat and Ramah, they can all be legitimate, despite the fact that the Ramah meant one thing. So they had a Siyata Dishmaya too. They were so meticulous, they were so accurate. There's such an Emunas Chachamim that we have to know what they're saying. We don't want to conjecture, we don't want to put our ideas in, but we have to accept and believe totally and completely what they say to us. Another thing that Slabotka was, of course, notorious for, that's the wrong word, is learning Musa. And in Slabotka, Musa was not fire and brimstone. Musa had two very direct aspects to it. One was the chokhmah of the Musa, understanding Chazal, understanding Midas, understanding human Sechar, understanding the Eitzahora, understanding the conflict that the Yitzhari creates in us, and how to compete, and how to cope, and how to deal with this. And that was chokhmah. In fact, they say that the Alter, when he said his Shmuz, did not speak emotionally. He spoke, and he was capable of the ultimate emotion, but very dry, intellectual, to first emphasize the intellectuality of the concept. So we're thinking, we're analyzing, we're using our brains, not just parking our brains someplace outside of the Beis Medrash and just listening with our emotions. And then we internalize the message ourselves to get the emotional benefit. The Balei Musa, the Alta, and the other Balei Musa too, but it's a very important principle that they learned in Slabotka, reviewed life, and this is very important to share with our Talmidim, and I'll explain why in a moment, I mean, even in more detail. They viewed life as a laboratory. Everybody is given certain raw materials, and our job is to make the best with the raw materials that we have. And that person has to know. That's my tafkid in life. To take what I have, not what you have, what I have. Everybody has different raw materials. Everyone has different capabilities. Everyone has different expectations. And only Hashem wants is take your raw materials and make the best possible human being, the most refined possible person that you can. And that is the ultimate. And that leads us to something else, that every man is responsible ultimately for himself. I would like to, haven't done it yet because I just heard about this the other day, the other week, but I'd like to develop a talk about stop Panama Canaling your children. How's that sound? Would anybody show up to such a lecture? Stop Panama Canaling your children. What do I mean? I read that the Panama Canal, I guess it must have portioned the thing, I don't think it's any big finish, that when the boats come, they shut off their engine and the canal carries them through. They don't do anything. There's no energy exerted. It's all they're being carried through by the waves, by the energy, by something through. The canal carries them. We Panama Canal our children and our Talmidim. In fact, today, many children grow up without a sense of self, in the sense that I am responsible for myself. Because from the youngest age, don't do that, don't touch that, you must wear this, you must do this, you must come to eat now, you must come to take a bath, you must here, you can't go there, you can't do this, you can't do that. I just got a call today. I was one of my kids, I get a call, I don't know who the individual was, maybe he's even sitting here in the room, but the kid went across the street when he wasn't allowed, and he went to a candy store when he wasn't allowed, and you know, I mean, this was an issue of sakona, so I told him I thought it was more serious. But the truth of the matter is, and oftentimes we have no choice, we have to do it, but we're Panama Canaling. And when you Panama Canal, what you send is a message that I am not responsible for myself. You are responsible for me. So the kid goes like this. The mother is telling him what to do. Once in a while, the father gets involved too. You know, she gets involved a little more, but that's besides the point. The father is telling him what to do. Then he goes to school. Then the teacher is telling him what to do. Then this was telling him what to do. Then that was. And again, he doesn't get the message that he's responsible. By the time he gets older and he should be a little bit responsible for himself, he doesn't know what to do. What does one do? Vos mentos responsibility. V'esmendos, how do you eat that? What is it? What are you talking about? Responsible for myself. And it's a very critical thing, because that's what the whole Torah is about. The whole Torah is about a person has to take that which he was given and make the best human being. Not be made into the best human being, be molded into the best human being. You can't mold somebody else. And if you mold somebody else, then what usually happens is you make him into a mold, the same as everybody else in the mold, and that's not him, and it doesn't fit him. And sometimes when you squeeze around a square peg into a round hole, you break pieces. And so it's extremely, extremely important. We have to teach our children. You know, some psychologists say it's a very good idea that from the youngest age, put out 2-3 choices of clothing and tell your kid, pick the one that you want to wear. Within reason to your expectations and sensibilities. Just give them choices. Make them feel they have some responsibility. Give them responsibility. Give them an allowance. Give them a little money. Teach them responsibility. You are responsible for yourself. Nobody else is going to take charge of your life, because ultimately nobody can. Yes?
But isn't that what the school systems are based on these days? The kind of systems are, you put everybody in a class, maybe 3 classes, but everybody's in a class and everyone's together and wearing the same material. It's not like each person has his own track necessarily. I mean, he should, and he should be able to feel that, and these little choices might help him, but it feels like that. I feel like the system, the whole system needs to overhaul for that.
Okay, so I'll tell you, you know, I'm not a youngster. And I've been agonizing a lot of these things for decades. And one of the things I learned is we're not going to change the whole system. But whatever we can do on an individual basis, as a parent, or as a Rebbe, as a teacher on some level, will be helpful. And hopefully, and the good news is that I have seen over the years that some of these radical ideas, not yet this one, but some of this one also has to do with money, because the classes have to be big, the money, you know, this is a financial situation too. But I've seen that many ideas after a while have been adapted and people are beginning to catch on and change things. So we're not going to be able to resolve everything. But to a great extent, even a classroom teacher can do that. There are opportunities to give, to tailor the questions that you give to the student that you feel can handle it the most. So he starts to feel good about himself. There are opportunities to preach and to teach about taking responsibility and tell the kids, hey, you know something, you have to go home. This is what you have to do on your own. And you have to write, keep a log about it. And you're going to be, nobody is going to oversee it. Just want to know that you're doing this. And, you know, we can have exercises. We can find ways. But at least if we're sensitive to that, that we're just not telling everybody everything. And even in a classroom, we can give choices. We can give choices. They can know, first of all, even discipline can be and should be a choice. There are certain expectations and there are certain consequences of the expectations. And when you violate or you don't do something that's expected, you have chosen a consequence. Just framing it that way has already created some type of an atmosphere where you're teaching a person responsibility for himself. And there are creative ways that a teacher could come up with and that a parent could come up with. So you're 100% right. The whole system we can't change. I mean, not at this point. But I think we can do a lot to make the difference. And just talking about it, preaching about it, take responsibility for yourself. Don't wait for someone else to be responsible. Set an alarm clock in the morning rather than having your mother or your father come in and scream and yell at you and pour water on you for a half hour. You know, so that's responsibility, you know. Take responsibility when you're going to go out to Daven Ma'ariv, when you're going to do this. We can encourage these things. We can encourage parents to encourage these things. And there are plenty of little subtleties and not so subtleties, which I think can make a difference, even though we can't change the whole system. Okay, just another couple of points on this, because I don't want to shortchange. One of the things, one of the great emphasis in Slabotka was on Midos. And Midos based on the Gadlus Ha'odom. The Gadlus, man is great. You know, I'm proud of this, although everyone's laughing at me. I discovered in a hotel that they have like these little wash, these little hand wipe things that you have, and a little thing, a shoe shine thing. Just a little shmata with some liquid on it that you can shine your shoes. I had my people order a box of 200, whatever it was. And I have a sign up in the yeshiva. I have a little thing with the little thing where they can take these things. I say, in Slabotka, they emphasize the Gadlus Ha'odom. Many people made fun of it and said as follows, a man is a malach, can you please shine my shoes? But in reality, what the Alter meant to teach is, a man is a malach, can I shine your shoes? And I put that up here. Here you can for your own shoes. You'll also look like a malach, or you shine your friend. You know, just that, just to send that message. Now people think I'm out of my mind. It never bothers me. But if it would have, I would have been finished a long time ago. But lemaisa, it's such a beautiful message. You know, a human being is a malach. A human being is a godl. A human being is yitzir kapov shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A human being is this godless ha'odom that I have to treat with the ultimate respect. And I have to love him, and I have to respect him, and I can't be jealous of him, and I have to be patient with him, and I have to be Danim Lekavskos, and I can't speak Lashon Hara about him, because the human being is great. It's a much easier sell in the long run when you deal with the greatness of a person. And that's Machayev, Ul the Bein Odom Lachaveiroi, that I have to show towards him. That makes it a lot easier for me. And true, the message is, if he's great, I'm also great. Not great enough that I should tell him to shine my shoes, but great enough to walk around with shine shoes, and great enough to act like a mensch, and great enough to realize that I have to live to a higher standard. And this creates a whole different atmosphere, because midas is something that even the secular world can appreciate, that there is such a basis and such a need and such such an importance to. Just want to close this topic with one more word, and that is, the Alter taught responsibility for Klal Yisrael. As a mechanech, we have to feel that sense of responsibility to Klal Yisrael. Chinuch is not a job. It's not a profession, although it should be done in many ways professionally. It's a calling in life. And the calling is Arvus. Kol Yisrael Areim Zebuzet. And the calling is Vishinantum Levonecho. That you have to be Melamed Ben Chaveroi, just like you have to be Melamed your own child. And the calling is Kiddushem Shomayim. And the calling is that I have a responsibility for Klal Yisrael. And if I instill a sense of responsibility for Klal Yisrael in my students, then I've given them another dimension of validation. I'm so important that this Rebbe, and I heard it from the 5th grade Rebbe, and the 6th grade Rebbe, and the 7th grade Rebbe, and the 8th grade Rebbe, and the 9th grade Rebbe, that they consider me responsible for the future of Klal Yisrael. What sounds more important than that? You know, that's not just responsibility as opposed to Panama Canal. That's ultimate responsibility. And yes, now not everybody is going to be the Godel Hador, the Manik Hador, but everybody can play a role. Even a person just in his own personal life of Kiddush Hashem, even in his business or professional life. But he has to feel an achrayus to Klal Yisrael. This is what Slabodka taught. The Alter made yeshivas all over Europe. He helped other people. It was never to him, his yeshiva, your yeshiva, my yeshiva. It was completely open, only ach v'rak for Klal Yisrael. Okay, now we have one more topic which we're going to try to do justice to. And that is one of the things that's most confusing, or very confusing to a lot of people. What's the story with this thing? It's didn't come? Is it coming? Okay. All right. Anyway. What?
I don't want to put too much pressure.
Okay. At least somebody's listening. Oh, I didn't even talk about pressure tonight. I'm sorry. Anyway. So, yeah. Torah Shabbat Peh. How does Torah Shabbat Peh really work? Torah Shabbat Peh is very confusing. Torah Shabbat Peh is also very, very difficult, very challenging. Torah Shabbat Stav never bothered anybody. You know, if you really need a light on Shabbos, go like this. Torah Shabbat Stav. There's ways, you know, you can. Torah Shabbat Peh. So much explanation. So many gedolim. So many gzeirim. So many syogim. So much machlokes. So much confusion. Give out. What's going on over here? And when it comes to finding an excuse, any excuse is good. And this one serves a lot of people well. And it's only an excuse. But we have to be able to articulate in a brief, in a simple sense, a sense of what Torah Shabbat Peh is all about, including machlekes, in order for Talmidim to have not just be okay with it, but to have passion and excitement with it, because they too are part of Torah Shabbat Peh. And kol ma shetalmid vosik osi lechadish nitno lemeisha misinai. Everything that any bona fide Talmud, doesn't even say Talmud Chochem, it says Talmud vosik osi lechadish, was given to Meisha Misinai. So everything that they'll be machadish, if it was appropriate, was given to Meisha Misinai. So I have an extremely significant chelik in this Torah Shabbat Peh. What's it all about? Okay, so first of all, Torah Shabbat Stav is a very written document, a very serious document. That we all know. We discussed, I believe it was last year, a lot about it, and the idea how all the evidence and testimony that exists to the amitius of Torah Shabbat Peh, the public, not only the public revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the public appointment of Moshe Rabbeinu as the Shliach Hashem, and therefore authorizing all the Sifrei Torah that were dictated to him, or the one that was dictated, and then the others that he wrote by the end of his days. In this parasha, I think Rashi brings it, 13 Sifrei Torah that he gave, one to each Shevet and one to hold in the Oron, and so this is real. And this document is real. It predicts the future. The Churban Bayis Rishon was prophesied in the Torah. The Churban Bayis Sheni was prophesied in the Torah. The return to Eretz Yisrael eventually, the Geula, was prophesied in the Torah. The details of the Golus were prophesied in such gory detail that if you read some of the Psukim, it's as if you're reading a history book, not a book of nevuah that was written so many years before the events took place. So Torah Shebichsav is a very serious document. Mimela, Torah Shebaal Peh must also be real. And the one who guaranteed the Torah Shebichsav, and everything in it is real, we see it today unfolding in front of our eyes, is guarantees his Torah Shebaal Peh. The fact that there must be a Torah Shebaal Peh is also imperative. And this is well known because we couldn't do any mitzvah kimat without a Torah Shebaal Peh. V'hoyu l'toytofois b'nei necho. Ma ze toytofois? Eifo ze b'nei necho? What? A lulav, an esrik, a sukkah, a matzah. Ma ze? What is it? What? Tzitzis, fringes. What does that mean? No, fringes is just an English translation. Hey, what? A mezuzah. Saftam al mezuzah is beisecha. What should you write? Where should you write? Which side of the mezuzah? You don't know anything. It says v'tomo shvuayim, but it says shivim. There's no nekudas, right? That's what Hillel told the goy. He wanted to learn. He wanted to prove him Torah Shabbat, to teach him Torah Shabbat without Torah Shabbat Peh. So he said, okay. You know, Shammai told him to take a walk. And Hillel said, okay, here's an Aleph, here's a Beis, here's a Gimel, here's a Dalet. Come back tomorrow. Comes back tomorrow. He says, here's a Gimel, here's a Hay, here's a Gimel, a Dalet, a Beis, an Aleph. He says, yesterday you told me if I cared. No, you see, you need Torah Shabbat Peh. That's all. That Torah Shabbat Peh. You don't know anything. You don't even know what an Aleph is. So the imperative of Torah Shabbat Peh is critical. And the fact that the Torah Shebichsav is such a serious document, it lets us know that the Rebbeinu Shlom would not allow a Torah Shebaal Peh. It had to exist, and it had to be shomur and accurate and relevant and appropriate. Otherwise, we would not be able to take the Torah Shebichsav seriously, which is such a serious document with such serious consequences. Remember, the Olam Chesed Yibuneh, the ultimate Baal Chesed, who created the world for Chesed, and says that Mechalaleho Mois Yumos, if you do a Malocha on Shabbos, you're going to be put to death. And he never told us what a malocha is. The seriousness of the document compels us to realize that the Torah Shebaal Peh must be there, and it must exist, and it must be guaranteed. Otherwise, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would allow us to be in a masiv today where we want to keep Shabbos, we don't know what it is, and therefore we could be chayav misa. I give up my job, I lose my job, I don't go to work, I suffer so much, I sacrifice so much, and I'm chayav misa anyway because I didn't know what a malocha was. Can't be. So that alone, and these things, little kids have to hear this gently. Don't get excited about anything like I do, I just get carried away. But it's really calm, cool, you know, matter of fact, funny thing happened to me on the way to the office, you know, kilachar yad, very, very important concept to be able to give over. And okay, so now we have to understand a little bit how does this Torah Shebaal Peh actually work. Well, first thing we know is that it was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu, but everything was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu then passed on this body of knowledge, and it was fast. Moshe, the Yeshua, this Kedim, the Nevi'im, Ashkenaz, Agdoilo, and the Rambam lists all the from Moshe Rabbeinu right down to Ravina and Ravashi, and then you have later lists that will take you all the way down to your last Rebbe, your last Rosh Hashiva. So we have this Mesorah from generation after generation, which is very powerful. There's nothing like it in the world. There happens to be a doctor in the room, so there's an exercise I used to do at the seminars. Could you tell us, Dr. Gamera, who was your mentor in medicine? You have one person who you look to as like your main... Oh, okay, that's even better.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's even better, because I was going to ask you, who was your mentor's mentor? No idea, right? And who's your mentor's mentor's what?
Dr. Pross.
He was your mentor. Who was his mentor?
I don't know.
Oh, good. You scared me there for a moment. All right. Now, in any place, let's get that. Maybe once I found a doctor who knew three generations back, because the mentor's mentor started that whole discipline of medicine. So he knew that. Otherwise, they can't do it. And yet I can say I studied in the Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva by Rabbi Henoch Leibowitz, who studied by his father, Rabbi David Leibowitz, who studied by the Altum Slobodko, who studied by Rabbi Simcha Zisal of Kelm, who studied by Rabbi Yisrael Salant, who studied by Rabbi Zulman Salant, who studied by Rabbi Chaim Voloshin, who studied by the Vilna Goin. And I actually have here, I'm missing that too. I have here a chart which can trace it back. Oh, I got it. From the Vilna Goin, which is about here. His name was Rabbi Elio Kramer, the Vilna Goin, in 1797. All the way back, right back to Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is what we have. It's a pretty impressive system. But let's understand a little bit how it works. So there's a very, very significant Parshas Metzorah. There's an Orach Chaim HaKodesh, which is very interesting. He has the following question. He says, as I'll say, that it's a Gemara that says Moshe Rabbeinu was Olal Amorim. Hashem was teaching him the Torah, and when he was teaching him, he showed him future Bote Medrash of future generations, and he showed him the Besmedrash of Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Akiva was darshaning, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand the drosha, and he started to cry. Then he heard that he said it's based on Halacha of Moshe Mi-Sinai, so he had a little bit of an achoma. Okay, fine. So the Orach Chaim asked, he says, Chazal say kol mashe talmid vosik osa lachadish nitol Moshe Mi-Sinai. Everything was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu, so how come he didn't understand the drosha? What went on there? So the Orach Chaim says an amazing yisod. He says as follows. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu was taught all of the halochas of Teresh Baal Peh. Every halocha that had to be known, Moshe Rabbeinu was taught, and he passed it down. Moshe Rabbeinu was also given the psukim, written the psukim, literally, dictated literally the psukim. What he wasn't taught was where in the psukim is merumas, is hinted all of the halachas of Torah Shabbat Peh. That was the job of the Chachmei Hadiras, the Chachmei HaTalmud, and so forth, to darshan the psukim, to use the midas shater and the dreshes bohen, the yud gimel midas, the lamed base midas, to understand, to see where the halachas that were passed down from Moshe Rabbeinu are actually merumas, are actually found in the Torah itself. He says, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand, because he didn't learn that from Hashem. Until he heard halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai, so that was a consolation. But that's the idea. So in other words, we have an amazing system. The Gemara in Tzmura says that, B'mei Evloi Shel Moshe Rabbeinu, they forgot 1700 halachas, I forget the exact number. And Osniel ben Knaz restored them b'fil kulay. As she says, with Kal Vachomer, with Gzeira Shova, through the systems, the midos, Sha'atir and Reshus for him, that those midos which Moshe Rabbeinu passed on to us in order to understand the Torah, Osniel ben Knaz was able to restore from the hints in the psukim the hundreds, I think maybe even 1700 or something, halachas that were forgotten when they were mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu. So that's what Torah Shabbat Peh is. It's all in the psukim. It's a system. It's an amazing system. Because it's a system that has two things. Number one, it can't be lost. Because we have an oral tradition. And we have hints of all of this in the written Torah. So if something was lost, they darshan. They were able to figure out halacha. That's number one. But number two, it provides an amazing opportunity for insight and depth of understanding. Because now I have two sources for every concept. I have the halacha l'Moshe Mi-Sinai, the Torah Shabbat Peh, the Mesorah that was given, and I have the hint in the Psukim. I have a posik that hints. So Memela, I can compare. And we do this often when we learn Gemara. We say, well, that seems to be the halacha, but how do you prove that from the posik? The posik doesn't justify that. The posik seems to say this, but that doesn't fit with the halacha. And by having two contrasting, or being able to contrast two parallel sources, we get a deeper insight and understanding of what the halacha actually is. And that is part and parcel of the system that had assured the survival and the continuity of Torah Shabbat Peh to this generation. So that's what he says, and that's the way it works. And that's an interesting a concept. But there's something else in Torah Shabbat Peh. And I believe that this is really the secret of the survival of Torah Shabbat Peh and the survival of Klal Yisrael. And that is like this. Let me ask you a question. Someone makes a speech, says a vort, something. And you have your own vort that you said. Which one excites you more? Which one are you more passionate about? Which one brings you closer to the author, to the ultimate source, to the Beirei Olam, who is the author, the Mechaber of the Torah? Somebody else's or your own? There's no doubt that for most people, when I can say my own chidush, when I feel part of the system, it connects me with the Torah. I have no doubt that the amelus, the dveikus, the mesiras nefesh of the gedolei olam for their learning, a Rav Yashiv who didn't waste a moment of his life, a Vilna Goyen who did tshuva for the seconds of Bittul Torah that he did in a year. Such people, where did that come from? Part of it was part of their humanity, because it was personal. I decide the halacha. In fact, I decide the halacha. If a baskoil were to come down and contradict me, I would humbly and respectfully have to say, Lo yibashumayim hi, ein mashkich and a baskoil. Because there's a Tirsh of Alpeh, and we were given the principles. I was taught by my Rebbeim how to learn the Tirsh of Alpeh. Maybe in the early days I even had a smicha which authorized me to be able to decide halochas with Tirsh of Alpeh. But it's mine. It's my chidush. It's mine. I remember once an elderly Rosh Yeshiva who already didn't have koyach to concentrate fully on his learning. But he would open up his own sefer, and he would have such a noise. I said that, wow, a bit, you know, like this, because it was my Torah. It's chaviven. That's why chaviven divrei sefer yosem ayin shel Torah. That may be one of the pshatim there, because they were machadishim. It wasn't. This is. It's me. It's my chelik. V'sein chelkeinu b'soirosecho. Psach libi b'soirosecho. We ask Hashem. And v'sein chelkeinu b'soirosecho. It's my chelik. It's my Torah. Oy, oy, oy. How satisfying. How uplifting. How connecting. How powerful it is in creating dveikus v'Hashem. So that's certainly a piece of the whole system and how it works. Now, what? What's that?
Just be careful about them when you're supposed to say my, etc. A lot of times, like you said, you don't like people say my,
Yes, you're right. You're right, and I appreciate that, Heora, and I would say as follows, that the people who preserve the Torah throughout the generations were mushlomim in the midas ha'anova as well. Their humility was great. But even the most humble human being has to feel that sense of, I'm connected to it. I was machadish something. The privilege of being machadish something in the Torah. The Sefer HaChinuch that I mentioned last time, where he says that he didn't know Shlema HaMelech, couldn't understand Por Aduma. Chazal say Moshe Rabbeinu was not, only Moshe Rabbeinu was going to understand it. And he says, my chibas hakoidesh, the cheshek lohovim bin historois, forced my pen to write. And it came up with something. And the pshat is the chibas hakoidesh and the cheshek lohovim, because not just Stam, because it's Teres Hashem, but I want to say a Chiddush. It's mine. I love it so much. It's so precious. And I had to, what you have to write? You know, but I feel it. I feel it. It's me. The connection with the Rabbi Chazal say, I mentioned it once. Rabbi Chaim Volozhiner says, a person who's dovuk in the Torah is dovuk in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the greatest dveikus comes, not, you're right, not to say, mine, I agree with you, but the Onov, who, here, Reb Moshe Feinstein was such an honor. Not Shaykh. Somebody was calling his kid. It's a Maisa Shehoya across the street. Reb Moshe was walking here. Said, Moshe la. Reb Moshe crosses the street. He thought he was calling him. You know, like Ad Kedekach. That's how he was. And yet, Reb Moshe was machadish chidushim, a broad chidushim against previous generations with such power, with such strength. That was his Torah. and he was machadish it, and he lived it, and it was his kinyan ha-Torah, and it was his contribution to future generations. That's why they wrote Sforim, and that's why they eternalized it. So you're right, it's a fine balance, and I appreciate the he'orah. Okay, let's just, there's one more piece which we have to discuss, and it's probably the most difficult piece, and we have 3 minutes, forgive me. Okay, and that is machlekes. Machlekes is one of the big things that confuse people. Machlekes, oh, this. Okay, Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Kimchai, very nice. What does that mean? You know, if we promoted early this evening the use of seichel and logic, then you can't just say, Eilu v'Eilu Divrei Kimchai, but let's go home. That may be what we have to say. So give me just a couple of minutes, okay? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Misharobu Talmidim Shloshim Sekol Solchom Nisrabu Machlekes B'Yisrael. Happened around the time of the Talmidim Hillel V'Shamay. Before that, there was barely Machlekes. There wasn't differences of opinion. When it came, many Talmidim that weren't Mishamish the Rebbeim, they didn't fully analyze and agonize and pursue and persevere in understanding what the Rebbe said to the fullest depth. That's when Machlekes started. Seems from there, clearly, that machlekes is a matter of not having analyzed everything fully, and therefore different perspectives. They saw it differently. They both heard what the Rebbe said. They both heard. They were both, these were geniuses. Talmid Hillel v'Shammai. They were geniuses, but tanoim. But something was lacking. They didn't push it to the end to be mishabish kol sorcho, and began to see. I didn't see the full picture. And machlekes is about not seeing the full picture. I like to put it in perspective by, question is if I have enough guts to sing it for you, but I like to put it in perspective by sharing with you a little French song, okay? And if anybody here knows any French history, there's a song they sing in French, Frère Jacques. Frère Jacques, dormez-vous, sonnez le matin, the morning bells are ringing, and then the French say, dan, dan, don. That's the sound of a bell. They translated it into English, and they said, morning bells are ringing, ding, dong, ding. They translated it into Hebrew, and they said, morning bells are ringing, sil, sil, sil. And I was told they translated it into Russian, and guess what they said? Morning bells are ringing, boom, boom, boom. Okay. Explain to me whether the bells in France and in New York and in Yerushalayim and in Moscow are different. It's what? A dog, that's right, same thing. A dog, a rooster, 100%. So what's the pshat? The teretz is, there's such a thing. I was this evening, I was with a speech professional, and she explained that a baby is born with many possible sounds that it could hear. But the only sounds that develop are the ones that it's used to hearing. So potentially the baby can hear any sound, but they only develop, so something like that. But anyway, I used to call this, I have to check the right word, acculturation. In other words, you grow up hearing certain sounds, so that's what you hear. You hear things a certain way. Now really, the bell has all of those sounds in it. And each person, each country, according to the sounds they're familiar with, they have a certain, they hear only one perspective of it. And really, there's a unified concept there, because there must be a little bit of a boom, and a little bit of a dan, and a little bit of a ding, and a little bit of a till. Otherwise, what, these people are crazy? So who's crazy? It's the Americans, the Israelis, the Russians, or the French? Who? The terraces. It's all there, but it's just how you hear things. Same thing. Machlekes started with partial perspective. Until that time, there was a one unified total perspective, and then they started to see things with a different perspective. Now, the question is, different perspectives have led to different halachas. Let's take the simplest, one of the simplest halachas to take, it's a machlekes b'Shammai b'Beis Hillel, in whether when you make Kiddush Friday night, you say Boreh Pri HaGofen and then Mekadesh HaShabbos, or you say the Mekadesh HaShabbos Brocha and then you say Boreh Pri HaGofen at the end. Machlekes Tanoim, right? We paskin like Beis Hillel, fine, but l'maisa, perspective? That's absolutely just the opposite. You make the bracha first, you make the bracha last. What perspective is there? And what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu want? Eilu v'eilu divrei Elokim Chaim. Wow. Now what? What's it all about? So I just want to share with you this, and with this we'll conclude. Forgive me. And as follows. I heard once from the Nevarik Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yankiv Yachin, the Gemara in Yerushalmi has a shaila with a kosvei tzitzit, Gemara in Brochas, I think, Davches in Yerushalmi, where the kosvei tefillin and mezuzos are potter from mitzvahs. Like, for the oisik ba mitzvah, potter in a mitzvah applies to Talmud Torah as well. So the Gemara says, didn't Rav Shimon bar Yochai sit in the sukkah, or lula, one of the sukkah's mitzvahs says, didn't Rav Shimon bar Yochai hold that loy mitzvah and aslasas noich lishol in Yivro? So he says, what's going on over there? It sounds like the reason that Rav Shimon bar Yochai had to take the lula or sit in the sukkah was because haloy mitzvah and aslasas, if you learn not in order to do, you would have been better off not being created. I would have said, the Gemara should have said, Shimon Choy had to take a lulav because it says ulakachim. And he had said, I sit in the sukkah because it says, v'sukkah steishvu. So he says, why is this like this? Meir de Kiyasur. He says, really, the mitzvahs are just to make the learning al menas lasus. Theoretically, if we would learn like Shimon bar Yochai, we wouldn't have to do any mitzvahs. But the reason we do the mitzvahs, because if we don't do the mitzvahs, then the learning was not al menas lasis. I'm learning, but it's not for the purpose of doing, because I'm not doing. So the mitzvahs are to make the learning al menas lasis. So I'd like to take this one step further and try to explain machlekes. It's like this. The tachlis of everything really is to learn the sugis hashas with the proper approach, with the tools that Chazal gave us, with the smichus of a Rebbe who says, yes, you know how to explain, I almost said interpret, but explain what's going on over here. This is the tachlis that we have. Now, we have to do it al menas lasis. It has to be a shibud, which means I learn the sugya and I come up with a conclusion. The Chazon Ish learned the sugya of Chashmal and came up with the conclusion that it's boine on Shabbos, not fire. Reb Chaim Oizer learned the same sugya and came up with his Das Torah with the concept that it was Eish and not Binyan. Okay, now there may or may not be a difference in Halacha Lamaisa. There might be in Yontif and this. There might be in certain Mitzvahs. But whatever it is, but this is now. So who's right? Who's wrong? Both of them fulfilled the tachlis of Torah al menas lasis. Because the Chazon Ish learned that this is binyan and he lived by it. And when Beit Hillel learned that you make the brocha before the other brother, the Bnei Priyakov first, he lived by it. So the learning Torah is for the purpose of Shivu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shivu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the essence. To be an Eved Hashem, when a person is mishabed himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that brings him in the closest proximity to Hashem, and fulfilling the tachlis of creation, we'll explain that in a moment. So really, it's all about learning the sugya and coming to a conclusion and learning it al menas lasis, that conclusion that a bona fide Talmud Chochom comes to, he lives by. My father-in-law had a chiddush in his sefer, disagreeing with the 18 minutes, and really, according to him, according to the Mogen Avraham, it comes out 22 and a half minutes or 21 and a half minutes, I forgot. But one year the Madats had an overrun and they had matzahs that took longer than 18 minutes. And they delivered all the matzahs to his house. They said, here, you're allowed to eat these. I wouldn't touch it, but that's besides the point. But the maisa, that a person, you know, you have to live. L'chumra, maybe you don't have to. But anyway, but that's what the Torah is now. So it creates shibud. What is shibud? So let's just talk a moment about shibud. There's a very interesting Sifri. The Sifri says at the end, Rashi brings the end of Parshas Vahar, says that when it says Avodayhem, and the Torah gives a special Asora for a Jewish Eved who was sold to a Goy, that he has to remember that he's still an Eved Hashem. Shaloi Teimar, the Sifri says, Ma Rabbi Eved Avodah Zorah Afani Kamoyu. Ma Rabbi Shefech Domim Afani Kamoyu. Ma Rabbi Mechal Shabbos Afani Kamoyu. Just like my master is kills and breaks Shabbos and does Avodah Zorah, Af ani, come on, I want to be just like him. Talmud learn avodayhem, he can't be. What's going on over here? I'm sold to a goy as an eved. The goy is so benevolent. The goy is so nice and kind and sweet and loving that he treats me in such a way that I want to be just like him, whatever he does. And especially Shabbos, and then you wouldn't have to work Shabbos if you're not Mechal Shabbos. Ma Rabbi Mechal Shabbos, Afani Kamo. What's going on over here? The Teretz is that there's such a psychology, Lahavdil, here it's in a negative way, that a person wants to emulate the one to whom he's Meshubit. Shibud creates the desire to emulate the Meshabit. That's a mitzvah in psychology. So I would like to suggest that that's really what learning Almanas Lasis is. When I learn a sugya, and I'm learning it Almanas Lasis, to be Masik Shmaitza Liba de Hilchasa, which is what the Chazanish says is the tachlis of our learning, that what I'm doing is I'm mishabed myself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Iker is the Shibud. The Shibud is what makes me into the Mahu Afato. The Shibud is what makes me want to emulate Hashem. What makes me want to reach that Shleimus Hamidus, that Letzaret Beres Abriya, is that Mahu Rachum Afato Rachum, that ultimate Dobuk Hashem, to be able to be Nenemiz Divashchina, to be Misaneg Al Hashem, and the Tainug, the Idun Agodo. That's what makes it. But if I don't do the mitzvahs, and it's not going to be Almanas Lasos. There's no real Shibud. The Shibud is a fake. I'm learning to be Meshavid, but I'm not going to live by it. So I'm talking Mechuyev to live by it. So Beit Hillel was Mechuyev to say the Berachah Brachah broke off him first. And Meshavid was Mechuyev to say, and what does the Rebbeinu Shel Olam want? The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants Shibud. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam wants learn Torah Almanas Lasos, and therefore act accordingly. Now, this doesn't apply to every fifth grader. I mean, not to every Rebbe. It applies to Chachmei Yisroel that have all the tools and the skills and the capabilities and the smichas harabonim maybe to be able to be masik shmaitz aliba de hilchasa. But one who does that, but ultimately that's the tachlis. And when we learn our learning, to whatever extent we do, and we're learning it to learn the halacha, even if it's a theoretical halacha of korbonos, but that's what we're going to have to do, kishyebone beis hamikdosh, and I want to be misham mishubit myself to bring the korban tomid, the staff design. When I went the last time with my shver to visit Reb Chatzkel Abramsky, it was a chalamoid Pesach, he told us, he says, I already bashtelt my koyin for the avodah, he had a koyin. He says, I have a shutta for the Korban Pesach because I have a small family, and I even have my two kashas that I want to ask Eliyahu HaNovi. So my shver was a little bit of a wise. He says, what were the kashas? You know, he asked him the kashas. He gave him some answers. But anyway, but like, yeah, it's like, this, it's real. I'm mishabing myself. I'm learning Korban. I'm mishubing. This is what I'm going to do. Kishin Yavon Eves HaMikdosh. And Shabbos, this is what I'm going to do when it comes Shabbos. And Tefillah, this is what I'm going to do when it comes to Davin. This is my and learning the Torah. Almanas Lasos creates that desire to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which elevates me to the highest level of Mahu Afato, of Dveikus Vashem, allowing me to fulfill the purpose of creation. So Memele Machli, and to boot, Chazal say, that Kol Masha Talmud Vosik Oso L'Chadosh Nitla Moshe Misinai, which means that both Hillel and Shammai's approach were taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Pashtus is, people talk about this one way or another, but the Pashtus is that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't give that over. Moshe Rabbeinu gave over only the unified perspective. But he was taught everything so that when Hillel and Shammai will have a Machlekes, or Beis Shammai Beis Hillel will have a Machlekes, Moshe Rabbeinu had been taught both. Both are Torah Misinai, and the tachlis is to learn Almanas Lasos, to create a shibud, and the mele to be dovuk b'Hashem, and to be mesaken my midas, and to be zeicher to that tainuk amiti, to be nenu ziv hashchino. I